Welcome to the Lending Forward podcast, brought to you by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. This is your home for real discussions about the mortgage and housing industry. Our hosts are here bringing you firsthand accounts from people at the heart of the business. And we're chatting with professionals from all corners of the industry as they help cultivate transparency around the future of the industry we love. Together, we are lending forward all we know to you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Let's dive in. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Active Comply. Active Comply's cloud-based platform empowers highly regulated industries to manage social media, websites, and remote work compliance with ease. Built from real user feedback, Active Comply's purpose-driven solutions automate policy enforcement, streamline audit trails, and cut compliance costs. By uniting expert support and intuitive IT tools, Active Comply unlocks capacity and protects your brand in a rapidly changing regulatory environment. To learn more, visit www.activecomply.com.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to this episode of Lending Forward. I am Bill Hitchcock, and maybe I'm just I'm in fan mode right now, but really excited to have Gary Acosta here with NAHREP. And it's been, you know, I was telling him before the show that I've watched him from afar and been a fan to see how he's grown NAHREP, and we're going to dive into that today. From, you know, when he started it as a CEO and founder to really where it is now and all of the national events. And Gary, excited to have you here. I do have to read some of your bio because it's so impressive, but I'm going to read it so I don't mess it up. But Gary has grown NAHREP into the largest Latino business organization in the nation with more than 58,000 members and 100 local chapters. Under his leadership, NAHREP has created the Hispanic Wealth Project, a nonprofit committed to increasing household wealth in the Latino community. And Gary's also served on Consumer Advisory Board of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, and on advisory boards for several Fortune 500 companies, including Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, JP Morgan, Chase. And he currently serves on the boards of NAHREP and Basecap Analytics. Gary has been recognized by Realtor Magazine as one of the 25 most influential people in real estate, and by Latino Leaders Magazine as one of the 101, they had to add that one in there, 101 most influential Latinos in America. That is amazing, Gary. So thank you for being on.
I appreciate it, Bill. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I know you know, all the things with NAHREP must have you traveling around the country a lot. I see the different events. I've seen you, you know, speak on several different platforms and occasions. But, you know, tell our Lending Forward community kind of something really quick about NAHREP. And I'd love you to tell the story, like what made you know, actually found it and start it.
So, as you said in the bio, Bill, NAHREP has roughly 100 chapters throughout the country. We have 58,000 members. Our members are predominantly real estate agents and brokers. About 2/3 of our members are. But you don't have to be a realtor to be a member of NAHREP. You can be a lender. You can be in the title insurance business. You can be in any of the services that are part of the housing ecosystem. The organization is 25 years old. We do a lot of things that I think good trade associations, which we are, do, in that we have a robust chapter network because all business is local. We host two major conferences a year that attract.
Coming up
in September, and we'll get roughly 6,000 people to that event. So it's a pretty good size event overall. We do housing policy work, and we produce a number of different reports, including our kind of flagship report that we call the State of Hispanic Homeownership Report. Why did I start NAHREP, or really what was the thrust behind it? You know, be careful what you wish for. But it was, honestly, I had a co-founder. His name is Ernie Reyes, passed away a few years ago. He was a kind of a mentor to me. He had an interesting background in politics. So he saw things from sort of a political lens and saw a need to kind of create an organization that really had some influence on housing policy, especially how it affected Latino homebuyers. But I was the entrepreneur. I was a mortgage broker myself. So I come from the lending industry. And I was looking for, like, how do I grow my business? I didn't feel like I had the connections or the access to capital or just the relationships I needed to really kind of scale my business. And I thought it would be really cool if there was an organization out there that can connect me to all the things and resources that someone like me would need to grow their business. So both of us kind of came at it from two different angles, but it did create kind of a perfect storm. The timing was right, and the organization seemed to really kind of stick once we launched it.
That's fantastic. You said 25 years ago. So you're kind of dating yourself just a little bit. Yeah. So you're a young guy back then when you started it. And that was probably a bold move at that time. Were you nervous? Were you like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Like you said, kind of careful what you wish for, or did you know it would get to where it is today?
So you never know, right? And you kind of, even people who are entrepreneurs, and I kind of think of myself more as that than a trade association person, you could probably think 5 years out at the most. Trying to think beyond that really is very difficult because the world changes so much, if you think longer than that. But yeah, I definitely had cold feet when we first we settled in on the idea and we were really excited about it. Then we were like, wait a minute, what are we doing, man? We don't know anybody outside of San Diego. Who do we think we are starting a national organization? But I had a friend that used to sit on the U.S. Hispanic Chamber Board of Directors. He gave me some really good advice and insight. And then we got kind of a lucky endorsement of sorts. Henry Cisneros was the former HUD secretary during Bill Clinton's era. He was the first Latino to hold that position. And we reached out to him. We didn't know him, but we told him, hey, we're starting this organization. You know, here's our mission statement. We'd love any advice or guidance you can provide us with. And, you know, to our surprise, Henry responded, wrote us back. He gave the first keynote speech at our launch event. It really added to our credibility. And he remained a very important mentor to us for, you know, pretty much the next 20 years. So we got lucky in a couple areas. You know, timing was right, as I said before, and things kind of just came together. And then, you know, I started off as a mortgage broker. But when NARP really started to take off, maybe 10 years later, I really myself got really carried into just the responsibility and the scale of it. And I decided at that point that this is what I wanted to do on a full-time basis.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's fantastic that you mentioned, and I think a lot of us have that, where you look back at your career or your life and you remember somebody that invested in you, took a chance on you, or, you know, it was that, you know, was that catalyst that, and maybe they didn't even know it at the time, but they were that catalyst that helped you really jumpstart, you know, your career, whatever that initiative is that you're working on. So that's pretty fantastic.
And that's absolutely true. I mean, I think that applies to all of us, as you said, right? We all have these sort of angels in our lives that somehow were at the right place at the right time and provided us with exactly what we needed at that time. So I think it's important to acknowledge that and recognize those people, and then to try to be that to somebody else down the line.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's a platform that NAREP offers, right? Where it's, you know, when you look at like giving back and when you look at trying to mentor and shepherd, you know, not always, a lot of times we say like the next generation, but it's our current generation, you know, trying to help people maneuver through this industry that's ours. I think NAREP, you know, they fill that void where someone might be saying like, I don't know where to start, or I did start, now how do I get better? So it's great that you all are providing that type of platform for such a large community. And I like, you know, when I first started learning about NAREP, I was like, well, wait, I'm not a real estate agent. It was great to know that I was still welcomed as being in the real estate community and in the housing community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So one of the things that you touched on, again, when I think of, you know, you going out and leading and then a leader kind of investing in you all and helping you move everything forward, you know, leadership right now is so key. And I think that when you look at, you know, when you look at leadership, people will define it all different ways, but I think it's, you know, it's character, it's follow through, it's learning, it's all of it. So right now, as far as when you go to define leadership, how do you define leadership in the real estate world right now?
I mean, this is probably overused today, but I think authenticity is critical, right? I think people are being inundated with messaging on a, not even a daily basis, on an hourly basis, either through social media or wherever you tend to get your information and news. So being an authentic leader that can connect with people, I think is where leadership begins. I think beyond that, you know, this is maybe a little tactical, but I think it's critical that leaders have strong communication skills. So you have to be able to articulate a vision. And obviously it has to be a good vision that people are interested in being a part of, but you have to be able to articulate it and you have to be able to sell it. And I think the people who do those things well, who come across as authentic and are able to articulate a vision, either both in writing and in just their speech, those are the leaders that tend to rise to the top, in my opinion. And I don't think real estate is any different in that regard than other industries or platforms. I think what differentiates real estate is that it is very much a sales culture, probably more than any other sector of the economy. And salespeople are constantly seeking little tidbits that give them an advantage. I think salespeople are constantly in need of inspiration and motivation, but motivation in a sustainable way, not in a sort of just soundbite way. So again, leaders that I think embody some of those skill sets are extremely valuable in the real estate industry.
Yeah, I want to stay there for a second when you kind of touch on the communication piece. So now in the world that we're in, communication is not only being a good communicator, but it's how you communicate and on what platform. So does that come into play or is, you know, through NAREP or whatever else you may see in the industry, do you see that as more of a challenge for a leader? Is how am I communicating on what platform? Or is that something where somebody can kind of set themselves apart because they've now mastered that situation?
I think that there's not any one particular platform or way to communicate, you know, in the real estate industry or any industry for that matter. But going back to the original issue of authenticity, you do see people who sort of, you know, kind of look a little bit forced, you know, in their communication, whether it's how they sort of present themselves on social media, you know, maybe it's in podcasts like this, because people feel like they need to, you know, migrate to mediums or platforms that are much more current today. But I think what's really critical is that you find the platform that you're comfortable with, that you can be your authentic self and it doesn't look or feel forced for you. So I don't think there's any one answer to that. I think it's important that you find the platform and the medium that fits to your personality and your message where you are comfortable and able to disseminate your message in a way that people will be able to receive in a really positive way.
That's, yeah, right. When you look at teams, you know, right now, there's, you come into contact with a lot of real estate teams, and I see different companies offering, you know, different value, you know, value propositions. How do you see the mentorship playing a part in building very strong, you know, teams and organizations?
Well, it's critical. I mean, I think that mentorship is critical. I mean, when, you know, you got to think about the way teams have sort of evolved over the last number of years, and they exist both in real estate and in the mortgage industry, as you know. It's really critical that the team leader, for one, also is very defined in what their value is to the team, right? They're just being the team leader, I don't think is enough. I think that you have to bring some value to that team that those other members of the team really value, and that really they get something out of the team, or else the team is going to be very, it's going to have a lot of turnover. You know, people are going to be parts of the team. As soon as they feel like it's time for them to move on, they will, or they'll jump to another team where they are getting what they need. Mentorship is critical in that, right? Being present for your team and being a source of that mentorship is one of the best ways to maintain that kind of stickiness that the best teams tend to have.
Now, are you seeing that as an area that's growing, where you see more teams being formed, you know, with strong mentors, with strong, you know, leaders? Do you see that as a movement that's strong and thriving, or are you seeing less of that than maybe you've seen over the, you know, 25 years that you've been with NARET?
I see it. It definitely has accelerated, and it has become, a staple in the industry. So even, you know, when we put together our top 250 lists, because one of the reports that NARA produces is the top 250 most productive real estate agents and the top 250 mortgage originators. But we do have to separate it between teams and individual agents, because they're very different in that regard. So we've learned from that process that sort of phenomena has only gotten bigger and more significant over the years. Now, if you're asking me to look out 5 or 10 years and what would be my prediction, I feel like teams are actually either going to get smaller or they'll plateau and maybe even start to kind of. And I think because of AI and different tools that are out there for individuals, I do think that smaller teams will be more nimble and be able to react quicker to different market trends and so forth. That's just a guess on my part, just seeing the way things are going. But, you know, your guess is as good as mine, Bill.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you say when you mentioned about the NARAP top 250, yep. I mean, I've got to ask, like, how many people start pinging you on text and dropping little notes trying to get to see if you'll bump them up the ladder a little bit?
Well, it is metric driven. So it's hard for me to do that, right? So it's based on either transactions or on volume, both. We have two different lists. So they have to provide us with evidence of their transactions or their volume so that we can, you know, be unbiased in the way that we rank them. So they can try. But I
envision your phone just blowing up of everyone. Like, Gary, what number am I? What number am I?
Usually I shouldn't say this, but usually it's the opposite. Usually they're saying that SOB across the street from me, he's a liar.
Right. Yeah. Show me the proof of his numbers. Yeah. I'm gonna see those numbers. So, but you know, it is for people who haven't seen the report, it is astonishing the numbers that people are doing, which kind of leads into the other topic that I really wanted to get into was around Hispanic homeownership in general in the country. So, we know the numbers out there, the report that you put out is phenomenal. But even though you've got, I think, more visibility, you've got groups like NAREP and you have active movements to increase Hispanic homeownership, there's still a gap. So can you kind of touch on that and, you know, give us a little insight of what you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, the gap is definitely there. And you know, there's reasons why that gap exists. Some of it is, you know, I would say not necessarily negative reasons. For example, Latinos in general are the youngest population in the United States, 10 years younger than the general population and 15 years younger than the non-Hispanic white population. So, you know, homeownership rates tend to go up as you look at different age buckets, for example. So you can make an argument that Latinos are just starting to enter those prime homebuyer years as a community overall. So that is certainly one of the reasons why that gap exists. You also have a fairly large immigrant population within the Latino community. And there's a number of different nuances that immigrants tend to have. One could be language and language barriers that exist. Another could be immigrants tend to be much more sort of involved in what we call the gig economy. So they kind of move from job to job, or they have a small business, or they're Uber drivers or whatnot. So it can be a little bit tougher to qualify them at times, right? So those are some of the reasons. And then you can, you know, look back and say there's also a wealth gap that exists within the Latino population and other minority groups. Some of that can be traced back to redlining policies and things like that, that there's still some repercussions in our society today. You know, so that wealth gap makes it tougher to accumulate enough for a down payment or just have the financial wherewithal to be able to purchase that first home in particular. So all of those things are there. I think the trends are what we tend to focus on a little bit more. It's like, is Hispanic home ownership increasing? Are the resources to help it continue to increase there? Are the housing policies supportive of that as well? That's what NAHRAP tends to focus on. And I think that for the most part, we're pretty optimistic on how those things look right now.
Now, I mean, it's great that NAHRAP, you know, really carries that banner for the entire community, because, right, what's impacting the Latino community is also going to impact, you know, all communities.
Absolutely.
As you know, as we go forward. So when you look at it from, I guess, lenders and realtors, what is NAHRAP asking for people in their local communities to really do to continue, you know, to continue the work that you're doing on a daily basis?
So you talked a little bit about, you know, the organization's kind of big picture. And so, you know, we kind of internally, we don't actually designate people this, but we kind of internally bucket our members into two primary buckets. And these are, you know, these are what members that are tend to be a little bit more transactional. So members that, hey, look, you know, the mission's great, but I go to NAHRAP because I'm looking for, you know, business, and I'm looking for, you know, business opportunity and whatnot. And that's fine. We are a business organization, and we want people to see the organization as an opportunity to make the types of relationships that can result in real business. We think that's a good thing. But the other bucket is what we describe as the inspired bucket. It's like they want business also, but they also want to be part of something bigger. And they like being a part of an organization that they feel aligns with their values and is contributing something positive to their community and to the country overall. So that inspired group, you know, doesn't have to be like sold. We just have to basically identify them. Those are the folks that tend to be want to be on boards. They're the ones that want to be on committees and that sort of thing. So identifying those individuals within our network and getting them the opportunity to participate in like Capitol Hill visits where they can meet with their member of Congress and go over the State of Hispanic Homeownership Report and share with them our policy priorities. We have a critical mass of members that are very passionate about those things. And those are kind of our kind of, you know, green berets of sorts within the organization that carry a lot of the water for us.
Yeah, that, you know, when I first started learning about NAHRAP, I think that's really what I saw the most was the events and all the fun activities. I mean, that was great down the road. But I think when I just saw the advocacy that was happening, that's what kind of made me lean into it and our company as well. Because if we are out there trying to find all types of home ownership opportunities, looking at the communities that we serve, you have to start there. And I think that that's one of the things that we've always proven true as being a local lender, is looking at how do we, you know, serve the entire community. You know, with there's the current administration, and I know it's you know, everybody's on all different sides of things, but you know, just there are some I guess actions that look like they could have significant impact to Latino home ownership. How does NAHRAP look at the rest of, you know, lenders and like all of the members, lenders, realtors, title company, you know, how do those companies continue to support, you know, NAHRAP's mission?
So, I think there's a number of different things about this administration that gives us reason for concern. And there's a number of things that they're doing that we feel encouraged by, right? So I think there are elements of the tax bill that are very housing friendly. And we're happy about that. At least at this point, the administration seems to be focused on what we think is the primary challenge in the market today, which is housing inventory. And so reducing the bureaucracy around building affordable housing stock seems to be something this administration understands and wants to be helpful around. you know, there's, you know, a number of policies that have come down, you know, where DACA is no longer eligible for FHA loans, which one policy, which we, you know, obviously don't think is a good idea. You know, one of the things that was disseminated during that time was this notion that somehow illegal immigrants were eligible for FHA financing, and that was never the case. These are just DACA kids that have legal status. It's just not permanent status, that were eligible for a period of time for FHA loans. Ironically, what most people don't know is that policy that allowed for DACA kids to be able to qualify for FHA loans was actually implemented during Trump's first term. Mm-hmm. It was Brian Montgomery and Secretary Carson that supported that and put that into the end zone. So, you know, take that however you want. The privatization of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which is not obviously something that's been implemented, but is, you know, more and more feeling, it's a feeling more and more that it's going to become a priority for this administration at some point. You know, that could be good. Depends on how this goes down, or it could be very problematic, right? So if the government completely disconnects from Fannie and Freddie altogether and they completely become privatized, you know, then what's their role at that point? And do they become a primary lender? You know, nothing could keep them from becoming a primary lender at that point if the government no longer has any connection to them. What would be their motivation for affordable loans or focusing on closing homeownership gaps? Probably not a whole lot. They won't be a bank. There, you know, there won't be CRA tied to what they do. So we want to keep a very close eye on that. And maybe the last thing is this whole sort of war on DEI that I think is creating a lot of, you know, angst in the marketplace, you know, especially for those of us that are advocating for minority and underserved communities. You know, my sense is that, and this is just me talking, that the whole DEI thing, you know, was probably, the pendulum probably went too far in some areas, but it certainly became unclear. Like, you can ask 10 people what DEI is, and you're going to get 10 different answers, right? And I think that that is part of the problem. I think everybody wants one thing, Bill. Everybody believes in equality of opportunity. Equality of opportunity, not equality of outcomes. Quality of outcomes are quotas. Quality of opportunity means we do our best to make sure that there's a level playing field out there and that everybody has an equal opportunity to succeed. When you do that, the best will rise to the top and there won't be artificial barriers. That's what we advocate for. I think that's the way it needs to be articulated. And I think, you know, these political winds tend to kind of work like a pendulum, right? They go hard in one direction, and they're going to go hard in the opposite direction, you know, at some point. So we try to be very selective in the battles that we take on and not react to everything that happens in the marketplace. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're in this for the long run. And, you know, we got to work with whoever's in the White House and whoever's in Congress at any given time.
You know, you mentioned at the start of the show here about being a very good communicator. I think you communicated that very well. And that's a resource I think that NAREP plays that is so valuable, that it is a source of information and content. And kind of one of the last words that you touched on there was the advocacy part. So I think that as we, you know, as groups are out there and they're making a decision, you know, of where do you invest, you know, time and money, I think investing in NAREP, putting time into NAREP to continue to, you know, to help grow and really to help build your team up. I think there's a number of resources that are available, you know, and a lot of time people just don't know what they don't know until they take a look. I know that one of the opportunities is coming up. You mentioned it before. Is it going to be the event in September? I think you said.
Yeah. So we have a regional event, by the way, in July in Miami, which is, I think, in your footprint for your company. And we have our national conference in San Diego in September. And it is one of the larger, not only Latino, one of the larger real estate events of the year anywhere. So we'll get, you know, some of the, you know, best presenters, executives, top producers on the main stage, on workshops. You know, it's a very content heavy event, but it is a phenomenal opportunity to make relationships and acquire those relationships. So I think that's why people go to the conference, go to any conference in the first place, is to make those connections. And I think we do that pretty well.
So it's one of those things to get your tickets now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah. You know, it's not, there's worse places than San Diego. So.
Right. Well, that's fantastic. And, you know, Gary, it wouldn't be an episode of Lending Forward if I didn't ask you how you plan to lend it forward for the rest of this year. So fire away.
So how do I plan to lend it forward?
Yeah.
Like what my philosophy is?
Yeah, just in you personally or in your role with NARAP, you know, how?
The thing that I think has really catalyzed the organization probably more than anything else is our focus on building wealth and being unabashed about that. But that all begins with acquiring what I describe as a mature understanding of what wealth actually is and what it can do. So that is our primary sort of objective for the remainder of the year, is to disseminate great content on that, to provide access to the types of things that can help people build long-term kind of generational wealth, if that's in the forefront. But I also think it's a great time for entrepreneurs. It's a great time for individuals that have innovative ideas, creative ideas. There's going to be more change in the next 5 years than in the last 50 years, as you probably know and agree with, Bill. So preparing our folks for those changes, making sure they have the access to the right information. That's our role for the banner of the year, for the remainder of the year.
I don't think anybody will argue with building wealth and somebody trying to help them do that. Where I think a lot of people see challenges, and you know, there's others that see a lot of opportunities. You know, you mentioned before about, you know, the housing inventory. What a better way to build wealth than through housing.
Absolutely. So,
I'm hoping that your crystal ball comes true and you're right on all those parts. But Gary Costa, I truly appreciate being, you know, you coming on Lending Forward and being on here with us. Like I said, I've been hoping to get you on here for a while so I can check that box. And you definitely made us here happy here. So we appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad we did it. You're a great interviewer. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, looking forward to many more things to come. So yeah, thank you. And thanks to everybody for tuning in to Lending Forward.
Thanks again for tuning into today's episode of the Lending Forward podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel, follow us on Instagram at Lending Forward, on YouTube and LinkedIn. Catch us every other Thursday with a brand new episode, and go lend something forward today. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSconsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender and employer. Located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 100, Virginia Beach, Virginia 23452.